Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's that time of the week where we do Q&A with Layla. It's one of my favorite times of the week because I get to engage with our resident nutritionist about a host of questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. And it's a lot of fun. There's a very varied content, and you never know what you're going to hear about, because it may relate to a problem that you have, a problem that a relative has. It's a great way of learning in hopefully an enjoyable format. So how you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good. So we're having our kind of a nice fall. Well, it's not officially fall, but it's getting there. It will be. We're having actually really nice weather here in New York. It's a little cooler, days are a little shorter, and the pulse is quickening because, it's a election season, and that kind of adds to the freneticism, developments in the news, like another assassination attempt thwarted, but you never know what's going to happen.
Busy flies.
Yes, indeed. So before we get to questions, I just want to talk a little bit about something that we haven't talked about here on Intelligent Medicine. And because of that, I did an entire podcast with my good colleague here in New York. He is a fellow practitioner of integrative medicine, Dr. Gary Goldberg, who is an OBGYN. And so he is actually on the faculty of Weill Cornell, prestigious medical college here in New York City, and is an attending there. But he has taken a path towards functional medicine. And so he's an expert on all things related to women's health and all things related to functional medicine in general. However, he has a niche knowledge in the field of some of these new advanced cancer tests that are coming down the pike. And in fact, he's on the speakers bureau for the Galleri test. That is a test familiar to you because in another one of your jobs, you work with a physician, Dr. Dana Cohen, who performs the test in her office. I haven't performed the test in my practice, but it is a cutting edge test. In fact, the company that makes it modestly has taken the name of Grail, the Grail company. Okay. It's like the Holy Grail.
Oh gosh.
Right.
The Holy Grail.
It's like we've cracked the code on cancer testing, they assert.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked about it. We also talked about it, from the standpoint of, the advantages, but also, some of the potential pitfalls in cancer testing. So, the main thing is that, the situation that we're in right now is that cancer testing is not so great. We have colonoscopy, which if done, can prevent colon cancer. and is doing a pretty good job. But then the question is, you know, not everybody wants to get a colonoscopy. So people want to do the Cologuard test, which is just a card test, yeah. You know, where you put the poop on the card and, you know, it tests it. But there's a lot of false positives with that test. True. And then if it's positive, you still have to get a colonoscopy. Now there's a new colon cancer blood test, which is highly touted, but it's also not perfectly accurate. It can miss some cancers, early cancers especially. It doesn't spot precancerous polyps, and it'll sometimes also have, you know, ring out some false positives, and then you still need a colonoscopy. So that's colon cancer. Then there's lung cancer.
Bottom line, get a colonoscopy, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
Goodness.
And excuse the pun, right? Bottom line. So then we have another major cancer killer, which is lung cancer. But the problem with lung cancer is that, you know, that routine chest X-ray, I don't know if you remember, you know, when you used to go to the doctor's office and they'd go, oh, get your annual chest X-ray. Well, it's a waste of time because it's not going to, it's not saving lives. And it's not saving lives for a couple of reasons. One is that it wasn't that accurate detecting small cancers. And B, lung cancer is not that treatable. So by the time you have a lung cancer, it's likely to, you know, not respond to therapy, even if you catch it early. Sometimes it can be, but, you know, that screening strategy was a waste. Then it was said, well, let's go look at smokers. They're high risk and make sure they get a spiral CT. I read a statistic where, let me see if I could pull it up, a statistic where it would turn out that you would have to screen, let's see, how many people? You would have to screen, I'm pulling up the statistic here. You'd have to screen 219 persons to save just one life with a spiral CT scan, which is kind of expensive, you know, and you have to go for annual screening. So, like, you know, a lot of people.
That's a lot of radiation.
And it's a lot of radiation, even though that's lower dose radiation. But, yeah, you know, so they conclude that it's not that practical a strategy. And then we have, you know, cervical cancer where you get a pap smear and, you know, pretty good. That's a success story relatively, but then some women don't get pap smears. And then, you know, and actually they found that the rate of screening pap smear, women who show up for, pap smears at the appropriate ages, you know, when you're 85, you know, maybe you don't need an annual pap smear, you know, you know, when you're younger, or especially if you're sexual active, you have multiple partners, if you have HPV, okay, fine. You know, get screened more often.
Yeah.
That's a win. And then there's, prostate cancer, where there's a lot of controversy about the PSA. We'll have a question actually about a new test for, prostate cancer coming up in today's discussion, from a listener in South Africa, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, but there you have the PSA test, which a low PSA doesn't guarantee you don't have it. And a high PSA doesn't necessarily mean you have it. And then, you know, sometimes men are subjected to unnecessary biopsies and even unnecessary treatment for a cancer that wouldn't have killed them. Or, you know, turns out they don't even have cancer. So, that PSA test, not that great. And so plus, a lot of these tests are kind of invasive. You know, it'd be nice if there was just a great blood test for cancer, like you couldn't for cardiovascular disease. You can get your LDL, you can get your homocysteine, your LPA, your apolipoprotein B, your LDL, you know, particle size. You can get image, you can get the ultrafast CT scan. You know, there's a lot of ways to predict cardiovascular disease, you know, insulin, hemoglobin A1C, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know.
Yes.
But for cancer, we don't have that test. So that's why they call it the grail, because with the advent of a new test. So the test is kind of cool. It actually picks up cancer with about 90% sensitivity.
Okay? 90%.
But it can miss 10%. Okay. But generally, the reason it misses the cancers is because they're small and early. But, you know, it's a disadvantage because you kind of want to find them early, right? So... it's more likely to pick up an advanced cancer than a very early cancer. And then the nice thing, though, is that, you know, you might say, well, this test is going to generate a lot of unnecessary biopsies and a wild goose chase looking for cancer, false positives. It's about 99% specific. Now, so the paradox of this is if you tune up the sensitivity, And I liken this to like a burglar alarm in the house. You know, you can install your own DIY burglar alarm. But if it's really sensitive, you know, like when the wind blows, you know, and you know, your potted plant's leaves move, you know, it's going to go off. So there's going to be a lot of, it's wow. very sensitive. Right. It will catch every burglar, but it will also catch, you know, the house cat passing by the, you know, the sensor, you know, so, so, but if you tune down the sensitivity, say it's like a 90% and you'll get, you know, more specificity, then, you know, you might lose the ability to detect a very stealthy burglar, you know? So anyway, so there's kind of a push pull on these tests, you know, the way they, adjust them. But, so they're doing
some people truly want, they want to see, they want to know if there's anything, if there's any way they can intervene, any possibility that they can catch anything early, and other people don't want to know.
Which, and the problem is,
I feel like it would be a wild goose chase, really.
The problem is that our testing ability may outstrip our ability to treat cancer. It'd be, you know, if this test were done in like 2075, when we have like reliable treatments that are generally effective for cancer at all stages, this would be an imperative. But right now, you know, okay, you pick up a cancer and it, one of three circumstances, it could be a cancer that, like a small prostate cancer, which would, you know, kill a man at the age of 127, you know, and they're not going to make it anyway. And it doesn't deserve treatment, but it's going to alarm, you know, the subject. And it's also going to engender unnecessary testing and perhaps unnecessary treatment. Or else it could be that you pick up a cancer where current treatments are not only not effective, but also maybe really burdensome to the patient, you know, and may extend life for a mere few months. At great cost to society, very expensive. So they're actually, and you know, and a third instance is where, great, you know, you catch it early, and it's a slam dunk. You know, you caught the cancer. Thank God you took the test. So they're actually undertaking a trial of this with the National Health Service in the UK, £140 million. But, and the good news is since the NHS is broke, Grail is sponsoring the test. They have a lot of private equity investors. There's a lot of money in this. So they have deep pockets. So they're actually underwriting the test. There's a lot of controversy in the UK about this because they think that, you know, one of those three possibilities is going to exist is the, you know, NHS is broke anyway. And so if we detect more cancers, we're going to have more testing, perhaps unnecessary testing. And that may ultimately not make a difference in the outcomes of these people. You know, that, you know, we'll say, oh, you must have a cancer. We'll do this or that or the other screening tests at great expense to find a cancer that maybe is either inconsequential or alternatively is not amenable to treatment. So there's a lot of controversy about that. The results will be in a couple of years. Meanwhile, some practitioners are using it. It's not covered by insurance. It's discretionary. They're trying to get FDA approval for it, in which case then it will have to be paid for by Medicare and Medicaid. And the major insurers will follow. So
is this the holy grail for cancer screening? That's interesting.
Yeah. And
it will be interesting to watch going forward.
Yeah. And the other thing is the accuracy of the test will improve. The other thing we talked about is there are certain genetic tests you can get. There's one called the MyRisk test, which is a broad spectrum test. You don't have to have any suspicion of cancer for this. You can just say, look, I'm getting my cholesterol checked and you know everything. Let me just do this test that's like a genetic test to see if I have any genetic markers that put me at higher risk for cancer. And it used to be that, you know, there were just a couple that we knew of, like BRCA, the BRCA gene, you know, for breast cancer. But it turns out that there's several dozen that have an impact on the risk of cancer. And so, and there are even some tests that are specific for pancreatic cancer. So what would then happen is, well, it's going to freak a person out. Like, do you really want to know? Well, maybe because then you can direct the test. You can say, well, you know what? There's, you have a 40% higher risk of, say, pancreatic cancer. So get more tests, more screening. You know, perhaps that would be someone who needs more frequent blood tests, although there's no single blood test for pancreatic cancer.
Yeah. More surveillance. Yep. Nip it in the bud, so to speak.
Yep. Yep. Right. Again, where we would love for the treatments to catch up, because detecting pancreatic cancer early is not a free ride. You know, often, even if it's detected very early, it can be fatal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it this is, I think, the coming thing. And, you know, we talked about it. It was a great podcast. Check it out at drhoffman.com. You know, if you haven't already, subscribe to our podcasts via your, you know, through Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or however you get your podcasts. You know, there are a variety of services that where you can subscribe to the podcasts. And Apple even has a transcript of our podcasts, which is very interesting. They use AI to instantaneously
to do the transcript. That's great.
And so
people prefer to read, so it's nice to have that available.
Exactly.
Very useful.
Exactly.
For many. So Dr. Hoffman, I think now is a good time to take a break for one of our sponsors.
Indeed. Let's give them their due, because it is they who underwrite this podcast. So let's hear an announcement from one of our good sponsors. Whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video, reference sheets, and more, all with the goal of helping you harness the power of personalized nutrition. You'll learn how to optimize your energy levels, support your mental clarity, improve your GI function, enhance your physical performance, and maintain your metabolic health. The course is regularly $49, but as an Intelligent Medicine listener, you can get access to this vital content for just $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman. That's the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. The ANA believes personalized nutrition holds the greatest potential to solve the chronic disease epidemic. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the Harness the Power of Personalized Nutrition course. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net.
Okay, we've got an email from Chris. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I have a follow-up question after your recent podcast with Jane Varlow. I read her book, and she's a big fan of Lomatium.
Lomatium. For viral infections. I think it's pronounced Lomatium, I think.
Lomatium.
Lomatium. Okay.
Lomatium.
Yep.
For viral infections, but cautions against the rash. Mm-hmm. That first-time users may experience with this herb. I'm wondering if the risk of the rash is worth the benefit of adding Lomatium to the winter arsenal against respiratory illnesses. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so, I did a great
now
podcast.
You had some...
Yeah.
You've had some experience with this.
I have. Well, first of all, I did a podcast with Jane Barlow Christensen. Yeah. The book is entitled Be Your Own Shaman. And she is a master herbalist who actually, it's a family tradition for her because her father was a real prominent botanist and herbalist. And so she's carrying on the family tradition, and she really has a wonderful, nuanced understanding of herbs. And not just, I think we get to some extent a bit of a bastardized version of herbs because it's like, they're like, the top 10, curcumin and quercetin. And resveratrol, and I think everybody's familiar with some of the main ones, ginkgo, etc. But she actually delves into this vast herbal pharmacopoeia and has come up with some that maybe people are less familiar with, that are less popular, but are nonetheless efficacious. And she also blends them together in formulas. And so she was so happy with the interview. She just was thrilled. And she said, oh, my goodness, can I send you a sampler of some of these herbs that we talk about? I said, great. I said, this is great because I'm just about to go on vacation. And I was going to go on a trip to Alaska this summer. And I said, I'm thinking of a travel pack, like what can I bring along in case I get sick?
Yeah.
And so the package arrives and she has like an assortment of herbs there. And lo and behold, I'm getting ready to put these things together to take along. And, like the worst nightmare before a big trip, is I start getting a scratchy throat and I think, oh, you know, maybe it's allergies or maybe I've been swimming too much. And then it's like, I'm feeling a little headachy and, you know, some chills. And darned if I didn't come down with like a cold right, you know, like the day before we were headed to the airport.
Oh, for crying out loud on vacation. Yeah.
And you know, negative for COVID, you know, did the responsible thing, you know, checked it out. That there is such a thing still as a normal cold, you know, but I cracked open her travel pack, and among the formulas is Lamatium. And knowing about this, I knew about the precautions, but I said, let me use this judiciously and I'll look for any signs of a skin rash. And I started taking it. And in the short term, I still came down with a crashing cold. I was really uncomfortable on the airplane. But the next day in Alaska, I started to feel better. And with a couple of days, I felt totally normal. Now, I think I took maybe, you know, 6 or 8 doses of Lamatium. And maybe it was my imagination, but I started to notice that my wrists and palms were starting to get a little itchy and red. And so I backed off of it. There is and she describes it, there is a well-known, and it's in the literature, you know, the scientific literature, that Lamatium in certain individuals can cause a body-wide rash, which is pretty uncomfortable. It's like red, itchy, raised bumps. And not an allergy because it does not respond to antihistamines. You know, you can take all the Benadryl in the world.
So the Benadryl goes out the window.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It might respond to steroids, kind of like, you know, poison oak or poison ivy. So the question, in her interpretation, it's a detox reaction. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, because when you have an adverse reaction, you know, it could be that you're having, you know, some sort of hypersensitivity of some kind, that is, you know, not a good sign necessarily, but she has a protocol for dealing with it, you know, you know, helps people sort of detox from the detox and mitigate that. I didn't have to start that because I backed off of the Lamatium. But if you read her book, she does address this this toxicity problems. But I think that Lamatium is a pretty potent immune booster, which doesn't necessarily make your cold go away, but it can certainly accelerate your immune system response, kind of like you blow through it quicker, I would say.
Wow. Yeah. So Lamatium, I'm looking it up a little bit. It's also known as desert parsley, Indian parsley, biscuit root, which is interesting. It's related to many familiar edible species, such as carrots and celery, native to Western North America and Northern Mexico. And some species are extensively used by Native Americans and inland Pacific Northwest as a staple food. That's interesting. So, Lamatium. But it's good that you got a little, can we call it a preview, what you started to feel?
I guess
so. That rashy feel on your hands then say, okay, I'm going to stop before this really gets full blown. And how long did it take for that reaction to subside?
Oh, I think it was very transient. It was just sort of lapping at the edges. And when I stopped it, you know, it backed off, and the whole thing could have been my imagination, but I was very attuned to it, you know.
Yeah, Nick, you know what? It's when we read about side effects, and we as practitioners are guilty of this too, where we read about a side effect to something, and then after taking the thing, we may develop the side effect. It's almost like
insurance. It's actually like a nocebo effect, you know, like a placebo. Suggestion, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like to dwell on side effects of medications with patients when I prescribe medications, because, you know, I said, mostly my response is, look, there are side effects. I'll explain the biggest ones. But if you look up the thing, you'll find 180 side effects. And there's a fair chance that, you know, in the course of a day, you will experience one or another of these, and you'll attribute it to the medication.
Right.
Try not to go down that rabbit hole.
I also let patients know that, you know, if this particular side effect happens to one out of 500,000 people,
yeah,
it's listed.
Yeah,
it's listed.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
Chances are you're not going to have this at all.
Exactly.
So don't worry about it so much.
Yeah. No, because they if it's even reported like very infrequently, they'll list it, you know. So it's almost, these lists are ridiculously long and comprehensive. I think what you want to look at is generally the, maybe the top 5 or 10 side effects. Although, look, anything's possible. Anything is possible. And we're going to hear, you know, about a response to a supplement that somebody experienced in among our questions today. So, thanks, Chris, for that question. I think it is a plausible therapy. And I think it's going to become one of my go-tos when I feel like I'm coming down with something. But, you know, I'll watch my skin reaction.
There we go. Good. Okay. All right. We've got a question here from Peter. Good day. I'm 85 years old. This is our listener from South Africa. I'm 85 years old, and obviously testing is very important. Now, Dr. Hoppen, what were you just saying about maybe you're 85 and you don't need to get tested anymore?
Yeah, anyway, well, that's a consideration. So it's not so much the test, it's the context of the test. But yeah, keep going on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Peter says, I've been concerned that my PSA test fluctuates so much.
Mm-hmm.
I did some research and found out about the new PSE test, which is so much more accurate. And more importantly, it can indicate the presence of cancer.
Okay.
I found out, too, that the new test was only available in the U.S. and in the U.K. Well, I live in South Africa.
Yep.
So for now, I just have to follow my urologist's interpretations of PSA readings. You know, well, what do you think about this?
Okay, great. This is also, you know, right in our wheelhouse of discussing cancer tests. And, you know, as this gentleman points out, PSA tests are unreliable. But I would say this, that an 85-year-old man, it's not uncommon for PSAs to be high. But the good news is that they fluctuate, okay? Fluctuation is good.
Yeah.
A trend where it's like 2.5 and then 3.3 and then 4.1 and then 5.5. And, you know, with a trajectory, that's what's called a PSA trajectory. So, you know, a sequential test can show a trend. But, you know, if it's like 3.5, maybe you're having a little urinary problem. And then, you know, next time you test it, it's 2.8. And then it's, you know, 3.1. And, you know, there's a little wobble around the accuracy of these tests, too. They're not deadly accurate. But they also may depend on, you know, whether you have ejaculated recently. That'll change it. I mean, riding a bicycle can actually change the result.
Yes.
Or, you know, simply could be having a, you know, a bad day at the urinal, you know. So that is encouraging. So here's the thing. Sounds good. Let's clarify this situation by getting an even more accurate test. And I'm just looking this up because this is new to me. You know, we could have an integrative, urologist on, or we could have, you know, one of our go-to guests, and I can ask him about it on a future podcast. You know,
Dr. Gio Espinosa.
Yeah, Dr. Gio Espinosa. We can, you know, who have that on, who I will have on recently. I'll make a note to ask him about this. It's called the EpiSwitch PSE. Now, first of all, I thought, oh, in South Africa, they pronounce A-E. You know, it's like, G'day.
Yeah.
You know, they have a funny way of talking. No, but it is a different thing. There is a PSE test, okay? And it purports to increase the accuracy of the PSA test. But let's put this in context. By increasing the accuracy of the test, it's more likely to find a very, very small prostate cancer in an 85-year-old. The incidence of prostate cancer in 85-year-old men is double digits high. And they, you know, at autopsy, an 85-year-old or a 90-year-old or a 95-year-old, they'll, you know, slice and dice the prostate and look at it under a microscope and say, oh, yeah, there was a little prostate cancer there. But it is inconsequential in terms of survival because that's the prostate cancer that might have killed you when you're 127, which you're not going to attain.
Yeah.
Or not. Mm-hmm. It might remain indolent because the body, the immune system actually fights cancers in your body.
Yes.
And sometimes cancers recede and disappear.
Yeah.
I would, you know, first of all, it's going to involve a trip to the United States. You're welcome to come to the States, enjoy yourself as a tourist, you know, come to Broadway, see some plays, go to the Southwest and look at the scenery, whatever. But, I wouldn't do that test.
Yes.
And I, you know, there's also a question is
symptomatic.
Yeah, there's also a question
is whether Peter was symptomatic and he needed to do something.
Yeah.
If he was uncomfortable, sure, go do it. But if you're going to simply go on a fishing expedition, if we may call it that, Dr. Hoffman, just because I'm 85
right.
and maybe I have this.
Okay,
we have to be concerned about the treatment.
So let's
find a tiny cancer that wouldn't kill him until he's 127.
So let's suppose we find a prostate cancer, and it is of the kind that is considered somewhat aggressive, because there's, you know, a low-grade prostate cancer now, and this is something that's only developed in the past 10, 15 years, is we do watchful waiting. We do active surveillance, it's called, you know, which means, you know, you're fine unless the PSA goes up. And then, you know, we have to do some therapy. So the therapies are, for prostate cancer, are radiation or surgery, and sometimes with or without hormonal blockade. So what happens when an 85-year-old man gets surgery? Well, even the best surgery is likely to result in some degree of loss of potency. That may or may not be a consideration for an 85-year-old. It also may result in some degree of urinary difficulty, not necessarily, but there's a risk of that, and that's pretty unpleasant. And that's, frankly, those two problems are kind of demoralizing for men. But then, if you go on hormonal therapy, that's like male menopause. And one of the things that's essential for men's well-being is testosterone. Well, they do androgen blockade. They block it out. In effect, you go into screaming male menopause. And I've had patients who come to me who said, "Doc, I'd rather die of the prostate cancer than be on this treatment because I am so low, I'm so devitalized, I'm so depressed. The side effects are I get hot flashes, I can't sleep, you know, just like women at menopause." So anyway, so the treatment is worse than the disease in this instance. So this is this guy's 45. Well, maybe you want a little more precision on this. You know, if there's some ominous PSAs, got a lot of years ahead. And if the person is in otherwise good health, you might want to take a more aggressive tack.
Yeah.
Cool.
That would make sense. Well, Peter, 85-year-old Peter, is obviously being very proactive. He doesn't have the things he would like available to him because he's in South Africa rather than in the U.S. Or the U.K. and more.
Go on safari, you know, and
go on safari.
Enjoy.
Right. Peter, thank you for your email.
Okay. Good point at which to go to part two, because time flies when you're having fun, as we so often experience here on Intelligent Medicine. Give us a preview what we're going to tackle in part two.
Yes, from Fran. "Love your podcast. Can you please discuss on your podcast this study about the effects of saturated fatty acids on lipoprotein little a?"
All right, that's in right in your wheelhouse as an integrative nutritionist.
Sure.
So we'll have you tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today is our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're answering your questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. Help us fill our inbox for next week with a question or a comment, a shared experience, and we'll be right back with more.